We live in an age of excellent investigative reporting. Despite what you might hear about
fake news awards,
you are fake news.
Dogged journalism at outlets around the world exposes corruption and injustice on a daily basis. Only often nothing happens afterwards. Unfounded is the story of an investigation that actually worked. The Globe and Mail published this 20-month report on the rates of sexual assault cases labeled unfounded, as in police have determined there was no crime, in February of 2017. Since then, every few months, another police department in Canada changes its practices, and new data shows that in dozens of jurisdictions around the country, unfounded rates have dropped, often by double digits. So what made this project different from so many exposés that dominate headlines and then disappear? Are there any other shoes left to drop here? How can journalists change not just hearts and minds, but policies and procedures? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story.
I have found that since the series ran, by and large, the desire to do better is real.
Robin Doolittle is the woman behind the Unfounded Project. She's one of Canada's leading investigative journalists. Hey, Robin.
Hi, Jordan.
How's it going?
It's going good. I'm excited to be here.
It is now a year and a half since this story dropped. Do you remember the day it came out?
Yeah, I very much remember the day it came out. Yeah, I'd spent, by that point, like you mentioned, 20 months on this. And my editor and I, like a couple days before, we were in the final stages of the editing process. I remember we had a moment where we sat in like a dark corner and we're like, I wonder if this is going to do anything. Like, is this just going to drop and we're going to hear silence afterwards? And that was a very scary feeling. So that first day or two, it was very much just kind of holding our breath. And all of our worries were for naught. Things changed very, very quickly.
So just explain quickly exactly what
the hell this story's about.
Yeah. Exactly what the investigation found and why everybody kind of gasped when it came out.
Sure. First off, unfounded is just like the most complicated word to try to explain when we're talking about this stuff. So basically, when police do an investigation, they give the case a code when they go to close it, and it's for statistical purposes. And they use a code for we've charged someone, or the suspect died, or this person has diplomatic immunity, the complainant doesn't want to proceed, etc. One of those codes means this crime did not occur. And that's unfounded. And when a case gets dumped in the unfounded bin, it is no longer considered a valid investigation. So police remove it from their statistics. We had 100 sexual assault complaints, 20 were unfounded. So we're only saying we had 80 sexual assault complaints. What I found was that police were dismissing one in every five complaints as unfounded, which is way higher. That's like 0.39%. The false reporting rate is between 2 and 8%. The unfounded rate in the States is around 7%. So our rate was way, way, way high. And it was, you know, disproportionately dismissing sexual assaults over other types of crimes. And there's a whole lot of implications. But the real thing that we wanted to do, my investigation was about how police were handling sexual assault cases. And getting this unfounded data point was sort of the lowest of low-hanging fruit in order to show that sexual assaults were not being treated as seriously as other cases.
Right.
And so we built this investigation with the foundation of this unfounded data that showed police were disproportionately dismissing these cases as baseless, and then investigated so many other threads of this story, including I looked into 54 specific complaints of sexual assault made to police, pulled court records and documents and interviewed the complainants, the police, witnesses, et cetera, and showed this systemic problem of police not treating these cases seriously, being confused about consent laws, not pursuing investigative avenues they would with other types of crimes.
So it's now been almost a year and a half. What do the numbers show in terms of the effect this is having? Because I know we've been getting periodic updates and all of them seem almost too good to be true from an investigative point of view.
So when we looked at the unfounded rate, it was across the board around 19%, just over 19%. And I should say that's the average. There were police services that had, you know, 30, 40, 50%. Like St. John, New Brunswick had a 51% unfounded rate. Lots of towns in Ontario had 30% unfounded rates. So now it's down to 14%, which is a 5% drop, which is really significant because, like I said, when a case gets unfounded, it doesn't count. So we also saw at the same time the rate of overall sexual assault reports jump by 13%, which gives us a clearer picture of the rate that women are actually reporting sexual assault. And that was a really key driver of this. Is I always found when we talk about, you know, oh, the problems with how the justice system deals with sexual assault, from police I'd always hear the line, you know, we just really need more victims to report. That's what needs to happen. People need to tell us what's going on. And what the Unfounded series showed was that the problem is not that people are not reporting, it's that they're not being taken seriously.
What kinds of things lead to that finding? I guess, like lack of evidence. They don't want to charge if they can't get a conviction.
Like, why are cases getting unfounded?
Yeah.
So there's a couple of things. So I said, I looked into 54 specific cases. And one really interesting thing that I found was it almost was irrelevant whether a case ended up unfounded or not. The mistakes were across the board, even cases that went to court. So things like, we have an affirmative consent standard in Canada. So you don't have to say no for it to be rape. You don't have to fight back for it to be rape. You have to indicate yes. And police did not seem to know this. It was a mass confusion around consent laws. We have a law where, you know, if you are incapacitated because you're really drunk or unconscious, you can't consent. Now, trying to figure out what crosses into incapacitated versus really drunk is really complicated. But police were not investigating that avenue. They weren't trying to see, well, how much did she have to drink? Let's go back and get the bar bill. I was finding things like police would make determinations on cases before interviewing witnesses. They were not collecting security footage that could have been helpful to the case. They were misinterpreting blood alcohol levels. They were, you know, closing a case because, she didn't get a sexual assault examination done. So we don't know. But the guy is not denying that they had sex. So it's irrelevant. That's an irrelevant
right.
detail. This is about consent. So there was just a lot of stuff like that, that I found these investigative missteps, as I've characterized them, that were derailing cases.
When the data first came out and you and your editor realized that you'd landed on something and that people were really reacting, what's the next step there in order to move it from, you know, reaction on one side of the political fence or another to actually getting people to move on this?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think a lot of it was we didn't do much at the very beginning. We collected all this data. And, you know, there's 177 police services in the country. There's around, you know, 1,100 jurisdictions. We can't write about every single one of them. But we made this data lookup tool that anyone in the country could go online and look up their unfounded rate.
Right.
And what this meant was that local media across the country was able to use our lookup tool and cover the story. So actually, you know, I had like Google alerts set up to my investigation. And in the days after, I was just getting, you know, dozens of ping, ping, pings, these Google alerts of local media writing about it and local police chiefs commenting.
And these are small town papers or radio stations?
Radio stations, TV stations, papers. And they were the ones that were holding police to account. And that's really what started the change. In the months before the story ran, we do this all the time. I call them my due diligence emails. I sent, you know, all the police services a breakdown of exactly what was in my story to give them a chance to comment if they wanted to add anything, et cetera. And almost none responded. I think I got like 10 police services in the country that gave me an actual answer. It kind of felt like a screw you situation.
Right.
And then after the story ran, I was having police chiefs call me and saying, look, I'm sorry we didn't give you the data. Can you please put it in your lookup tool? Because we are just getting hammered at home. It was really the local markets that did the accountability on holding them their feet to the fire in the early days. At the end of the year, what we did that I think was kind of unique, that I think could be a model for investigations going forward, we went back to every single police service to see what they'd been doing, to see how many cases, because they all announced they were going to do reviews and go through previously closed cases. They were going to look at training. And
that's kind of the stuff that normally in the aftermath of investigations is like the boilerplate, right? Like, we're going to take a look at what's here and we'll review our policies.
Yeah, but to actually, okay, what are they actually doing? Because they were all like, we're going to fix things. What are they actually doing? So we went back to every single one, and then we put all those answers in the lookup tool so that their local media could again go in and see exactly what their police service was doing. And by the time we were doing that at the end of the year, the police were very happy to participate in the series. I have found that since the series ran, by and large, the desire to do better is real. It's like any organization. Big organizations culture change is hard. And the prevalence of rape myths and stereotypes is real in police services because it's real in society. And I think kind of drawing attention to a lot of the issues that the series did, like I said, just gave the cover to some of these voices within police services that maybe it's not that they were like being dismissed, but they were not given the latitude to actually make the changes they were talking about.
Well, you reached critical mass.
Yes. And now there's a dominoes that there are every, you know, every month more police services are kind of getting on board. I get calls from police chiefs, especially smaller forces, that are asking questions. And it kind of puts you in a weird role as a journalist. Is to be like, I'm not really the one to talk to you about this, but there's this person and this person and this person that are really up on what you're asking about new training or oversight or whatnot.
You did that work before in the months leading up to February 2017. And I wanted to talk to you about timing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it must have played a role here. I mean, this comes out in February and by September, October, the whole world is talking about this stuff.
Yeah, a lot of people are, you know, like, oh my gosh, like the timing, that was so lucky. And sure, but it wasn't a coincidence that I was interested in this topic. I started looking into this series because Gian Gomeshi was on trial and everyone was talking about it constantly. This was the summer of 2015 when I started. And I was thinking, oh, like this would be interesting to kind of, I wonder if there's a way to go at the question of does the justice system fail sexual assault victims from a data perspective? But the Gian Gomeshi trial was sort of one of these flashpoint moments in this overall reckoning that has been building for years. So yes, my series came out right before Me Too. Me Too didn't start with Harvey Weinstein. What the things that gave the New York Times the cover and the interest to pursue that story had been building for a long time. I believe they started because of the Bill O'Reilly investigation, which was around the time of, you know, the Silicon Valley investigation that they were doing. So this reckoning has been building, and that's all these things kind of come together at the same time.
How does that help to keep momentum on a project like Unfounded going?
One thing that's been really interesting about this series was my vision for it was much more modest. And it was really the Globe and Mail that said, no, you need to do the whole country. If we're going to do this, we need to be have every single angle covered so that it can't be dismissed. Like they were really the ones pushing me to make it what it was, which was the right call. At the time, I think I threw some things in a boardroom once, being like, I just want to get it over with because it's hard to work on something for a year and a half. So the Globe has always had tremendous buy-in on this story, and I never had to convince anyone otherwise. I remember when I was in digging up all of these specific cases, and I had 54 in total, I was like, I don't know how to pick which ones to put in the stories. And all of them are worth writing. And I was like, is there any way, like, could I write all of them? And they said, sure. And they ran everyone in the paper as well as online. Every single day for a month and a half, we had an individual story about one of these cases. And I'm going to continue checking in. Like I'll check in probably for the rest of my career on what's happening with this sexual assault reform. Did it have an impact? The majority of police services in this country are doing something. They are doing reviews. They're implementing new training. They're implementing oversight. It's more than 50% of the population is being policed by a service that has embraced some of the most progressive changes around sexual assault reform.
That's thanks to you.
I don't mean to be totally cliche here, but really if the sources that spoke to me had not done so, none of this would have happened because people are not going to get out of bed in the morning because of a stat of 19.39. They need the stat and they need the person to realize that those data points are people.
I just think it's so interesting that we've been through a year and a half of changes and progress and there's still no finish line. Is there a rate?
That's good news.
Yes. Yeah. But is there a rate that we can strive for? I mean, obviously, you'll never get an unfounded rate of zero.
Yeah,
nor
you don't
would you
want
probably
it.
Want
yeah,
to,
you don't
right?
want an unfounded rate of zero. You want, yeah. So there's been three big studies of false reports in for sexual assault done in the UK, North America, and Australia, and it's between 2% and 8%. And most people that I speak to say that this is kind of in and around the range. You know, you want your unfounded rate to be 10% or less, like probably around the 7, 8, 9 area is appropriate. It's when you have police services that are dismissing 50% of your cases that way. If you think you're getting 50% fewer sexual assault complaints than you actually are, how can you possibly staff or resource your police service properly? You can't assess what's actually going on. The reason we keep statistics is to make evidence-based decisions around funding and resources. So if your statistics are garbage, then why are you doing them at all? Why are you collecting them at all?
Hey, you're writing a book about this.
I am writing a book about this. I'm writing a book about the broader reckoning that's happening right now. And it's killing my summer.
Thanks, Robin.
Thanks, Jordan.
That was The Big Story. For more, you can visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You'll find all of our old episodes there, as well as a contact us button. And don't be afraid to use it. We do take suggestions. Also, you can find us on social media at Big Story Podcast on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. And of course, subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts and give us a rating. Give us a review. Tell your friends if you like us. Don't tell them if you don't. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.